Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Wednesday, February 23rd, 2022. Coming up this hour,
President Biden's first round of Russia sanctions hits the markets with a whimper.
S&P futures stage a comeback after falling into correction territory.
A shift in the pandemic, Apple drops its mask requirement at most retail stores.
And Barclays posts its highest annual profit on record.
New York State is investing $60 million to beef up cybersecurity, plus National Guard troops head to Washington, D.C. for possible trucker protests. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Yankees announced they will honor one of their former great players, the Islanders, with a win in Seattle.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119. And around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and U.S. futures are bouncing back this morning. We're coming up to 6:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are up 30 points, Dow futures up 204, NASDAQ futures up 135, or about 1%. The DAX in Germany is up 0.9%. The 10-year Treasury down 7/32. They yield 1.96%. They yield on the 2-year 1.59%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.7%. Or 66 cents at $91.25 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.6% or $10.80 at $18.96.60 an ounce. And the euro 1.1348 against the dollar. Nathan.
Well, Karen, we begin this morning with the latest developments out of Ukraine. The country plans to declare a nationwide state of emergency as tensions with Russia mount. President Biden has unveiled sanctions against Moscow as Secretary of State Antony Blinken calls off a meeting with Russia's foreign minister. Amy Morris has more from our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
The latest sanctions target Russia's sale of sovereign debt abroad and the country's elites in response to what Biden calls the start of Putin's invasion of Ukraine.
We have no intention of fighting Russia. We want to send an unmistakable message, though, that the United States, together with our allies, will defend every inch of NATO territory.
This, as Secretary Blinken says, his meeting with Sergei Lavrov is canceled because, in his words, doesn't make sense to go forward at this time. Ukraine's foreign minister says their plan is to use every diplomatic tool possible to deter Russia and prevent further escalation. Their plan B, he says, is to fight. In Washington, I'm Amy Morris, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Amy, thank you. Reaction pouring in over the conflict with Russia. We spoke with former U.S. Ambassador to Poland, Stephen Mull. He says this first round of sanctions might not be enough to deter a further invasion.
I think we're going to be looking at, over the next days and weeks, an incremental move by Russia to see how far it can get in meeting the objective that Putin has laid out. I don't know that there's any sanction that the U.S. Could impose that would stop them from going all the way through with what Putin has clearly said.
Former U.S. Ambassador Stephen Mull spoke with our Washington correspondent Joe Matthew on Bloomberg Sound On. Catch the program weekdays at 5 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio.
Well, Karen, all these developments have the S&P 500 starting the day in correction territory. The index is down more than 10% from its January record. Walter Todd is Chief Investment Officer at Greenwood Capital.
I think it's important at times like these for us is just to kind of, you know, try to step back and look at, you know, try to maybe dig in on some individual names and, you know, earning stories that we're still getting despite all these headlines kind of whipping things around. And I think, you know, it can present opportunities for companies maybe that have just reported that maybe don't have that much exposure to this situation directly that, you know, are getting caught up in this macro trade.
Walter Todd at Greenwood Capital says the market is still watching the Fed. He expects the central bank to gradually raise rates and then pick up the pace of tightening in the second half of the year.
Well, Nathan, there's still a smattering of earnings to talk about this morning. After results from Home Depot yesterday, we get numbers from home improvement retailer Lowe's. We get a preview from Bloomberg's Tom Busby.
Lots of caution ahead of Lowe's fourth quarter earnings on worries that revenues at the nation's number two do-it-yourself chain may be impacted by the same higher cost and supply chain problems that weighed on Home Depot's results. One key for investors is whether Lowe's changes the initial upbeat outlook it gave them back in December. Bloomberg Consensus calls for adjusted earnings per share of $1.70, revenues of $20.89 billion, and same-store sales up about 2.2%. Tom Busby, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Tom, thank you. And those Lowe's earnings just crossing the Bloomberg fourth quarter profit and sales, easily beating analysts' estimates. It also boosted its forecast.
Well, in Europe this morning, Karen, shares of Barclays are up 2.5%. The British bank posted its highest annual profit on record. Barclays dealmakers had a busy end of the year, helping to offset a slump in trading activity.
Well, turning to the pandemic now, Nathan, we're seeing a shift in retail's approach to COVID. Apple dropping its mask requirement at most stores across the U.S. We get this story from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
The company announced the changes to employees at eligible stores and has updated its website to reflect which locations are no longer requiring masks. Apple, however, will continue to recommend that customers wear masks and will provide them upon request. Employees say Apple retail workers will still be required to wear masks. Apple locations in New York have made masks optional for customers who are fully vaccinated. The iPhone maker also is ramping up for the return of in-store classes. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thanks. Different story in Asia when it comes to the pandemic. Infections are still rising in Hong Kong, and that has the city expanding fiscal stimulus measures. We get more from Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis.
In the annual Hong Kong budget, Financial Secretary Paul Chan said Hong Kong would offer $1,300 payments to residents. The economy expanded 6.4% in 2021, but he forecast that 2022 GDP would fall to a range of 2 to 3.5%. In the meantime, the government has rolled out more details on mass testing residents some three times over the next month. And a leading lawmaker, Michael Tien, says that Hong Kong should impose a strict citywide lockdown for 9 days to rein in the outbreak. Tien says a lockdown would be preferable to stringing along drastic social distancing restrictions, restrictions that he says are strangling business. Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Brian, thank you. And one other note out of Asia this morning, HSBC, Citigroup, and Bank of China say they will close all of their retail branches in Hong Kong temporarily on Saturdays beginning in March. The move comes as Hong Kong scrambles to contain its worst COVID outbreak yet. Futures this morning are higher. S&P futures up 32 points. And straight ahead, we check your local headlines as well as sports. And this is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. 607 on Wall Street, 59 degrees in Central Park. We have a crash in Newark. It's on eastbound Route 78 at exit 57. Details coming up in traffic. First, Michael Barr with more on what's going on in New York and around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. Tensions between Russia and the West have led New York State to tackle cybersecurity. Governor Kathy Hochul says a joint security operations center will open in Brooklyn to help combat cyber attacks in the state. Hochul said the state would set aside almost $62 million in the 2023 state budget for stronger cybersecurity measures.
We truly live in a digital world. You think about all your transactions, you know, how you access money, how you pay your bills, how you make purchases in medical records, even our power grids, NYPA, our transportation systems, the MTA. They're all vulnerable to cyber attack if we don't take precautionary measures.
Governor Hochul was joined by several mayors to announce the Joint Security Operations Center, which will be the first of its kind in the nation, including New York Mayor Eric Adams.
Never forget sitting down in Gracie Mansion, speaking with the former mayor, talking about the pandemic and other issues that were facing the city, and he was clear. He says, Eric, your real crisis is going to be cybersecurity.
Mayor Adams went on to say the difference between a minor cyber attack disruption and a catastrophe can be a matter of minutes. New York City began its push to remove subway riders using the transit system for shelter. It's part of a strategy to reduce crime and restore confidence in subways. NYPD Transit Chief Jason Wilcox said during MTA committee hearings yesterday, the Departments of Homeless Services and of Health and Mental Hygiene have gone out to talk with riders who lacked housing and help them find shelter. Former President Trump has run out of appeals to keep the January 6th committee from seeing his White House records. The Supreme Court denied Trump's attempt to shield several hundred pages of records. Last month, the justices voted 8-1 to deny Trump's temporary emergency request to delay turning over those papers. New York is paving the way for hemp farmers to get a head start on growing marijuana for legal sales that are expected to begin next year. Governor Kathy Hochul signed legislation that lets hemp farmers apply for 2-year licenses to grow pot. Licensees can start planting this spring. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts from more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. Almost 6:10 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Sports Update with John Stanshauer.
Nathan, in 1993, the Yankees traded Roberto Kelly to Cincinnati for Paul O'Neill. Swap of outfielders turned out to be a great Yankee trade. O'Neill a mainstay on four World Championship teams. Since retirement many years in the Yankee broadcast booth, the team announced on August 21st, number 21, will have his number retired. O'Neill called it his greatest honor. Meanwhile, if and when the lockout ends, Yankees might be in pursuit of a big free agent. ESPN reports there's growing belief that Freddie Freeman is not going to re-sign with Atlanta, and the Yanks are in pursuit. Brian Flores, who in his racial discrimination lawsuit alleged that while coaching the Dolphins, owner Stephen Ross offered him bonus money for each game the team lost, now has made another allegation on HBO's Real Sports. Flores said that after he got fired in Miami, they offered him millions to sign a non-disparagement agreement, and he refused. Flores just recently got a job as an assistant in Pittsburgh. A $24 million settlement in the gender discrimination lawsuit brought by the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team, 28 plaintiffs, including Carly Lloyd.
It is a historical moment, and, you know, just like all the players prior to me, the pioneers who helped make things better for when I came into the game, we're doing the same, and just really proud of the group. I mean, we've started this journey 6-7 years ago, and it's been long.
Going forward, the women will now get the equal pay as the men. The Islanders began the season with 13 road games, back on the road for five. First stop, Seattle. Zach Parise scored twice. Isles won 5-2. UConn basketball having its best season in a while, a 2-point Big East win over Villanova. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan.
All right, John, thanks. Right now, S&P futures are up 31 points. Dow futures up 214. NASDAQ futures are higher by 140 points after the S&P 500 ended yesterday in a correction following President Biden's sanctions announcement. We'll get the latest on Ukraine with Isaac Boltansky of BTIG next. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, sunny, breezy, mid-60s today, upper 30s tomorrow with a wintry mess possible tomorrow night, rain Friday with highs in the low 40s. Right now, 59 degrees in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European equities are rising along with U.S. stock index futures on this Wednesday morning as investors assess some limited initial Western sanctions against Russia amid the Ukraine standoff. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are up 27 points. Dow futures up 186 and NASDAQ futures up 126. The 10-year Treasury down 9/32. The yield, 1.97%. The yield on the 2-year, 1.60%. NYMEX crude oil is down about 0.9% or 80 cents at $91.12 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.6% or $11.10 at $18.96.30 an ounce. The euro is at 1.1346 against the dollar. British pound, 1.3604. The yen at 115.09. And Bitcoin this morning moving higher at $38,840. And also Lowe's, as we said, reporting earnings fourth quarter profit and comp sales beating analyst estimates. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, thank you very much. Tensions over Russia and Ukraine continue. Ukraine will seek to impose a nationwide state of emergency. It comes after Russian lawmakers authorized President Vladimir Putin to use military force outside his country. Jury deliberations are set to begin today in the case against three former Minneapolis police officers involved in George Floyd's death. They are charged with depriving Floyd of his civil rights by failing to administer aid when Officer Derek Chauvin pressed his knee into Floyd's neck for more than 9 minutes. In the NHL, the Islanders won. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thanks. It's 6:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and Isaac Boltansky is with us. Director of Policy Research at BTIG, as we continue to follow developments around Ukraine. Isaac, it's good to have you with us this morning. I want to get your reaction to the latest development we've seen, that Ukraine is planning to impose a 30-day nationwide state of emergency. What, if any, impact could that have on the tensions with Russia?
I think that it tells us that we are still in the early innings of this story, and that it's probably going to get worse before there's any potential for it to get better. And I think that's a fair assumption given where tensions are generally, but as well as the fact that we're seeing pretty coordinated sanction actions from the U.S. and its allies, which I think are going to be part of this story going forward and lead to potentially anything from cyber attacks to, of course, whatever Putin will do on the ground.
So you don't think that the sanctions as rolled out so far from the U.S. and Europe will have the deterrent effect that the allies and the U.S. had been telegraphing that they hoped sanctions would have?
Yeah, look, I don't think there's a detailed set of instructions for exactly how to implement sanctions of this nature in the face of what Russia's doing. But from my seat, the White House prioritized coordination for this first tranche to show a united front rather than bringing down the proverbial hammer. You know, the first tranche of sanctions announced by the U.S. is meaningful, but we should really think about it as being preliminary rather than final. The U.S. and, for that matter, its allies still have a fair amount of dry powder left if this crisis escalates. And that's one of the questions that we're hearing here in D.C., which is what's next in terms of what can be done either administratively or legislatively.
Now, based on what you are hearing, what's the expectation? What is Washington bracing for in terms of a next move from Russia?
You know, I think everyone, at least in my conversations, will make the point that no one knows what Vladimir Putin will do other than Vladimir Putin. There is a belief that there will be further escalation of tensions on the ground and more movement accordingly. But from a D.C. perspective, I think that there is ongoing groundwork being done for another round of administrative actions. And we can talk about that to the degree that you like. But I can also tell you that lawmakers who are out of town this week are going to come back next week ready to move on some of the legislative options, especially with the State of the Union in the background and President Biden likely to focus on this issue to at least some degree.
Do you think there's a possibility that we could see more coordination, more unanimity among members of Congress when it comes to sanctions that could come from Capitol Hill? It seems like there has been a lot of difficulty, at least up to now, for lawmakers to agree on a sanctions package against Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, one of the leading senators on this said that we were on the one-yard line, I believe, before they left, right near the goal line to getting a deal done. But there were some real divisions over whether action should be taken preemptively or they should wait for Russia to move. There were also some questions about whether some of the steps would actually end up hurting our allies. For example, if you get a change to the SWIFT financial clearing system, it could actually imperil tens of billions of dollars of payments from Russia to creditors like Austria, France, and elsewhere. You know, to me, I think that we should believe that the next few weeks on Capitol Hill will be focused on this issue and that there is a clear path to passage for bipartisan legislation that will provide additional funding for pro-Ukraine independence fighters and is going to, I think, take specific target on Russian oligarchs and their holdings.
In our last 30 seconds here, Isaac, why do you think President Biden has sort of held off on dropping the hammer? He telegraphed before this beginning of an invasion, as he termed it, that the U.S. would bring down severe economic penalties if Russia were to make a move like this. And it seems as though, at least as you've been saying as well, that the president's kind of holding things a little bit close to his vest here.
My sense is that there was a decision within the White House to prioritize coordination. And just yesterday, we saw the U.S. act, along with the European Union, the United Kingdom, Australia, Japan, and most notably, of course, Germany, who froze the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline. And I think what the White House wanted to do, and this is a message that we've seen from them since, you know, they were on the campaign trail, is they want multilateral pressure to force changes from other countries. And so I really mm-hmm. believe that this president in particular, given his background, wanted to advance the most unified front. And the yeah. only way to do that was to take these initial measured steps.
All right.
See where we go from there.
Yes, we will. Thanks, Isaac. Good having your insights this morning. Isaac Boltansky, Director of Policy Research at BTIG. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, sunshine, breezy, mid-60s today. Upper 30s tomorrow with a wintry mess possible tomorrow night that'll turn over into rain on Friday. Cold rain with highs in the low 40s. Right now, 59 degrees.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
Six 30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 3 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. It's time for the five things you need to know to start your day, brought to you by Interactive Brokers. Interactive Brokers charges margin loan rates from 0.75% to 1.58%. Rates subject to change. Learn more at ibkr.com/compare. We begin with the latest developments on Ukraine. The country plans to declare a nationwide state of emergency as tensions with Russia mount. And President Biden says he is raising the number of military forces in the region. We get the very latest from Bloomberg's Ed Baxter.
President Biden says he has no plans to fight Russia militarily in Ukraine, but the red line is at the boundaries of NATO countries.
I have authorized additional movements of U.S. forces and equipment already stationed in Europe to strengthen our Baltic allies, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania.
Meanwhile, the first sanctions, White House spokeswoman Jen Psaki says, are just the first step.
They're designed to have a squeezing impact over the course of time, and we have many more escalatory steps that we could take.
And they say no future talks with Russia are planned. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ed, thanks. President Biden's first round of sanctions on Russia hit the markets with a whimper. Global stocks are rising this morning after yesterday's slump saw the S&P 500 close in correction territory, down 10% from its January highs. Still, the next round of sanctions could bite a bit harder. That's according to Saxo Bank Chief Investment Officer Steen Jacobson.
The next step up from this will be very serious in terms of the issues of debt and the connection inside to Russia. As someone who goes to Russia, I know the Russians, of course, live with this, but I also know that the business people that I know and talk to in Russia are certainly impacted by this and feel this is a constraint on the way they do business.
Steen Jacobson at Saxo Bank says the Federal Reserve should still be the primary focus for markets right now.
Well, on the earnings front this morning, Nathan, shares of Barclays up almost 3%. The British bank posted its highest annual profit on record.
Apple shares are up almost 1% in early trading, Karen. The iPhone maker has dropped its mask requirement for customers at most U.S. retail stores. That follows reduced COVID cases and changes in local mandates. But Apple staff, they'll still have to wear masks.
Well, Nathan, in Hong Kong, HSBC, Citigroup, and Bank of China say they will temporarily close all of their retail branches on Saturdays beginning in March. The move comes as Hong Kong scrambles to contain its worst outbreak of COVID. And that's the five things you need to know to start your day, brought to you by Interactive Brokers. Again, futures are on the rise this morning. S&P futures up 27 points. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports, and this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thank you. 633 on Wall Street, 60 degrees, 60 in Central Park. Starting to see 15 to 20-minute delays in the Lincoln and Holland tunnels. Michael Barr is here with what else is going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. New York Governor Kathy Hochul says the state will set aside almost $62 million in the 2023 budget for a joint security operations center to help combat cyber attacks in the state.
We can no longer act independently, and that has been the case where the state of New York has its plan, city of New York has a plan, our mayors, our local governments throughout the state of New York. And that is not sustainable in light of the threats that we're seeing.
Governor Hochul says the operations center will open in Brooklyn, New York Mayor Eric Adams.
And if we don't get a handle on cybersecurity, What COVID did to our bodies, cybersecurity is going to disrupt the anatomy of our city and our state. And it's imperative that we take a forefront, forward-thinking view of this.
Mayor Adams was joined by other mayors in the state for Governor Hochul's announcement. Businesses in New York and other big metro areas are beefing up security in response to an uptick in violent crime by paying the city's own police force to work at their stores and office buildings. New York City has long administered its own program for off-duty officers to stand guard outside private businesses, but after the pandemic hit, spending for the paid detail program shot up to its highest amount in more than a decade. The Pentagon has approved the deployment of hundreds of unarmed National Guard troops to Washington, D.C. The city is preparing for trucker convoys that are planning protests against pandemic restrictions beginning next week. Some California truck drivers plan to head to Washington, D.C. This driver says he expects they will gain support along the way.
We expect the convoy to grow by the thousands, and I would imagine by the time we get to D.C., there will be tens of thousands of people that are involved in this movement by the time we get there.
The convoys follow the recent Canadian truckers' protest of government pandemic restrictions. Elton John was able to make his New York show last night despite a terrifying air scare. The singer's private jet suffered hydraulic failure about an hour into his flight from the U.K. to New York. Then the pilot told air traffic and to prep for an emergency landing about an hour from London in 80-mile-per-hour winds. After two landing attempts, the plane landed. John caught a later flight to New York in order to make it in time for a sold-out show at Madison Square Garden last night. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Not the way you want to see the red taillights.
No.
Thank you, Michael. 6:36 on Wall Street. Here's John Stanshaw with the Bloomberg Sports Update.
Thanks, Nathan. This is always slow time on the sports calendar, but usually there is spring training in the anticipation that brings. Instead, we have a lockout. And while the two sides have been meeting, it seems every bargaining session never brings about any real progress. Sometime next week, they need a labor deal or they'll announce the season is not going to start on time. Yankees did make an announcement, one that a lot of fans have been waiting for. No one has worn number 21 since Paul O'Neill retired in 2001. The Yanks will officially retire it on appropriately August 21st. O'Neill played 8 years in the Yankee outfield and became broadcaster, 23rd number the Yanks have retired. Islanders start a five-game road trip. First stop, Seattle.
Aho left circle block. Mayfield center point. Wide right on purpose. Rebound to Zekas. He scores! What a beautiful play! Mayfield missing the net wide on purpose so that Cizikas could bang it in from the right of the crease. It's 4-0 New York.
Chris King, WEPN. Isles won 5-2. They get to a game under 500. Big East, UConn by 2 over Villanova, who had beaten the Huskies 5 straight times. UConn won it without its coach, Dan Hurley, ejected in the first half. Conflicting reports on when Ben Simmons will make his Nets debut. Some that'll be soon, and others that could still be weeks away. Simmons needs to ramp up, having not played since last May. Reaction from Aaron Rodgers to that cryptic Instagram post where he seemed to talk about his years in Green Bay in the past tense. He said people shouldn't read too much into it, that he was just in a reflective mood after being in a 12-day cleanse. It's, of course, probably the biggest question of the NFL offseason. Will Rodgers stay with the Packers, get traded, or retire? John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports.
All right, John, thank you. 6:37 on Wall Street. Time to take a look at stocks. Some of the names moving in the pre-market with Bloomberg Radio and TV Markets correspondent Kriti Gupta. Well, Kriti, I guess what better to spark a relief rally than a technical correction?
Exactly. By the dip, it seems to be the theme of this morning, at least. We'll see if it lasts through the open. What's interesting is that you're actually seeing a big tech stocks in particular lead the rally this morning, kind of mixed in with some earnings stories and, of course, those oil names. Now, you have those two sides of the trade, essentially, that defend expensive tech trade that, of course, has the heavy weightings on its side. But then you also have the oil piece of the equation, which we know time and time again has continued to rally given those geopolitical tensions and driving, or kind of, I should say, following Brent's march up to $100 a barrel in WTIs as well. So now you are, of course, seeing some of those names once again trickling at the top of the leaderboard this morning, though, when it comes to volume, is AMD and Intel. I should mention at the close yesterday, AMD, of course, the chip maker Advanced Micro Devices, reaching $188 billion in market value, surpassing its major rival Intel for the very first time. Both stocks are up over 1% this morning, Nathan.
Well, apart from all the geopolitics, of course, we still have a lot of earnings, including this morning, Crady.
A ton of earnings. Let's start with Lowe's here. LOW is your ticker, up just shy of 3%, rising on a sales beat, an increase in a full-year outlook. A little bit of a divergence from what we heard from Home Depot yesterday, where they're saying they're actually going to be a little bit of a deceleration in that profit growth going over 2022. A similar story when it comes to Palo Alto, of course, a cybersecurity stock. PANW is the ticker, up 7.7% this morning after their second quarter results impressed the analysts, beating most expectations and even getting an upgrade to neutral over at JP Morgan. Stellantis is the other one. STLA is your ticker there. The car maker up just shy of 7% in the pre-market, targeting double-digit adjusted operating income margin and positive industrial free cash flow. That's a lot of jargon for a really good quarter, essentially. Yeah. And getting with it, some good commentary from analysts as well. The results, the analysts saying that the results were, quote, much above expectations, quote, even the most bullish ones like us. So good news for Stellantis. I'll end here with Marathon Oil. We started with oil. I'll end here with Piper Sandler upgrading it, MRO, to overweight in a note on the exploration production sector and reiterating its overweight weightings on Devon Energy and Pioneer Natural. Once again, a good bid on oil. MRO is your ticker, up just shy of 2%, Nathan.
All right, Bloomberg Radio and TV Markets correspondent Kriti Gupta with the daily pre-market update. And as we take a look at stocks as a whole, ahead of the Wednesday morning open, futures are moving higher. We have S&P futures up almost 24 points now. Dow futures up 150. NASDAQ futures are higher by 126 points. The 10-year Treasury is down 7/30 seconds. The yield, 1.96%. Stay with us. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, sunshine, breezy, mid-60s today, upper 30s with clouds tomorrow. Wintry mess tomorrow night turning over into rain and low 40s for Friday. Right now, 60 in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Futures moving higher this morning. Let's go to the First Word breaking news desk for today's morning call. Here's Bill Maloney. Bill, good morning.
And good morning, Karen. That's right. U.S. futures are in the green after yesterday's sell-off, with Dow futures up 139 points. S&P's gained 22, while the NASDAQ futures are up 114. The U.S. 10-year yield at 1.97%. Gold is down 4.4%. Oil is also lower, but Bitcoin is trading higher by 2.7%. Japan fell 1.7% overnight, while European markets are trading in the green right now. And back in the U.S. on the economic front at 7 o'clock, U.S. mortgage applications. After the bell last night, Palo Alto Networks forecast exceeded expectations. Shares are up 8% in the pre-market. And regarding earnings this morning, Lowe's beat and boosted its EPS forecast. In other news, Activision to delay next year's planned Call of Duty game. And wrapping things up, Sunoco raised a buy over at Citigroup. Intel raised a market perform over at Raymond James. Live from the First Republic News Desk, I'm Bill Maloney. Karen?
All right, Bill, thank you. And here live breaking news over your Bloomberg. Type Squawk on your terminal, S-Q-U-A-W-K. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Karen. Ukraine will seek to impose a nationwide state of emergency over the rising tensions with Russia. It comes after Vladimir Putin moved what he called peacekeeping troops into Ukraine. President Biden has imposed stricter sanctions against Russian banks, business elites, and their families. Senior Biden administration officials say the Transportation Department is awarding about $450 million in grants for port-related projects to bolster capacity and improve the movement of goods. The U.S. economy continues to be affected by congested supply chains. In the NHL, the Islanders won. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg.
The following commentary is from Bloomberg Opinion.
Biden's Ukraine response is mired in barrels of oil. I'm Liam Denning, a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. Russian President Vladimir Putin's latest incursion to Ukraine has drawn new sanctions from the West. But harsh measures against Russia's energy industry remain off limits for now. That's because the West needs Russian energy, and that includes the U.S. For all the talk of U.S. energy independence, the country still imports millions of barrels a day, including a rising proportion of Russian ones. These have largely replaced imports excluded by sanctions on Venezuela. With pump prices up sharply already and midterms due in 9 months, President Joe Biden is walking a tightrope on sanctions and wading through millions of barrels of Russian oil, too. I'm Liam Denning. For more opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
And Bloomberg Opinion commentaries can be heard every weekday at this time, and terminal customers can read more at OPIN Go. It is 6:50 on Wall Street. We turn to news and science and technology now with the Bloomberg NJIT STEM Report, brought to you by New Jersey Institute of Technology, ranked a top 50 national public university by U.S. News and World Report, and a top 50 college for undergraduate entrepreneurship studies by the Princeton Review. Learn more at njit.edu. Now here's what's making news in science, technology, engineering, and math. The U.S. maternal mortality rate is already high compared to other wealthy countries. Now it's increased. According to the CDC, the latest figures show almost 24 deaths for every 100,000 live births. That's more than double the rate in the U.K., Canada, and France, and black women fared much worse than white women. Apple has dropped its mask requirement in most retail stores across the U.S., that following reduced coronavirus cases and changes in local mandates. Apple's also ramping up for the return of in-store classes. The company is preparing to launch new versions of the iPhone, iPad, and Mac. And traders expect machines and mobile apps to take over even more of the action in financial markets in 2022. More than 60% of traders predicted an increase in algorithmic trading in the next 2 years, according to J.P. Morgan Chase's annual FICC e-trading survey. The findings highlight increased reliance on computers to identify and execute trades, a transition accelerated by remote working during the pandemic. Mobile trading applications are forecast to be the most influential technology in shaping trading this year, moving to artificial intelligence and machine learning over the next 3 years. And that's the Bloomberg NJIT STEM Report. Nathan.
Okay, Karen, thank you. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, where it's coming up to 6:52 on Wall Street. Time now to check what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories in our nation's capital include President Biden ramping up sanctions on Russia as he says an invasion of Ukraine is just beginning. The president delaying oil permits as gas prices surge on the Ukraine developments. And the president urged to declare a climate emergency as Build Back Better fades. Let's get more now on all these stories. Bloomberg government reporter Emily Wilkins joins us now. So we got the sanctions announcement from the president yesterday, Emily. How's it being received?
So far, not extremely well. We're seeing a lot of criticism, particularly from Republicans, saying that these sanctions do not nearly go far enough. I mean, we didn't really see any big changes with the markets yesterday when these sanctions were imposed. They include targeting Russia's sale of sovereign debt abroad and also the country's elites. But they really don't go for some of the measures that really might cripple Russia a little bit more and have them feel some of that pain that sanctions are intended to. And the deputy U.S. National Secretary, he told reporters that the White House, that this is just the beginning of the invasion and the beginning of their response. He called these group of sanctions the first trench and said there would be more coming. And that kind of mirrors what we've heard from President Biden, saying that, you know, this is the beginning of an invasion and that they're going to be considering more sanctions in days to come on Russia. That was only the first group that they've so far imposed.
Now, I know Congress is out on a recess right now, but given these developments so far, are we hearing anything at this point from Capitol Hill in terms of coming together on a sanctions package of their own?
I think there's a sense that this is going to be priority number one when Congress does get back next week. It is a little hard just to call everyone back to D.C. at this point for a couple of reasons. I mean, number one, this is something where President Biden does have a lot of authority to act and to move, so he can start making decisions at the moment. The other thing is that, you know, members of Congress, they are scattered all across the world right now, so it does get a little more tricky to have them all come to D.C. than, say, if they were just in their districts. remember, too, before they left for this break, lawmakers were trying to find some sort of agreement on sanctions, on timing of sanctions, what the sanctions should be. And I think those questions could have the potential to linger when they get back to Washington. I think there's additionally a sense, a question of, you know, what happens next? Does Putin go beyond invading these two separatist regions in Ukraine? And what does that look like? I mean, interesting to note that while Republicans didn't receive the sanctions well, Ukrainians did. You heard from Ukrainian officials that they thought the measures were appropriate at this time.
It was also interesting to hear from the president yesterday warning Americans that sanctions might not come without pain for Americans. At the same time, we're seeing the White House delaying oil and gas permits on federal land. I mean, that could sort of complicate things when it comes to trying to get a handle on rising gasoline prices.
Yeah, this wasn't necessarily a decision made by the White House alone. The Interior Department warned of delays in these new drilling permits because a federal judge blocked the administration's method for assessing how these permit approvals impact climate change. And so because you have this pause by the judiciary on a rule from the administration, that is delaying their ability to get some of these permits out there. And there were some officials who say this move could only have a minimal short-term impact on domestic oil production because there are so many permits out there already that are not being used. But at the same point, gas prices are a huge concern for President Biden. He has vowed to do everything that he could to get them down.
All right. Bloomberg government reporter Emily Wilkins with us from Washington, D.C. Thank you, as always. You can read more about these stories on Bloomberg.com or on the Bloomberg terminal and follow all the latest on Bloomberg Radio in Washington, Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2. Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. It is 6:56 on Wall Street. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. February is Black History Month, and every day this month we are celebrating significant moments in U.S. Black history. Now with your installment for February 23rd, here's Bloomberg's Renita Young.
On this day in Black history in 1979, Frank E. Peterson, Jr. is named the first Black general in the U.S. Marine Corps. He was determined to serve his country despite racial discrimination. Peterson first attempted to join the U.S. Navy, but was asked to take the entrance exam over because administrators believed he had cheated. In 1950, Peterson enlisted in the Navy, and 2 years later, as a Marine, he completed flight school and was commissioned as a second lieutenant. Peterson went on to become the Marines' first Black aviator and served as commanding general for the Marine Corps Combat Development Command. Throughout his career, Peterson received several military awards, among them the Navy Distinguished Service Medal, Defense Superior Service Medal, and the Purple Heart. So in 1988, Peterson retired as lieutenant general after serving as special assistant to the chief of staff. That's Today in Black History. I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Radio.
All right, Renita, thank you. And futures on the rise. S&P futures up 20 points this morning. Dow futures up 121 and NASDAQ futures up 104. 10-year Treasury down 6/32. The yield 1.96%. The yield on the 2-year 1.59%. And NYMEX crude oil is down 0.33% or 28 cents at $91.62 a barrel. Bitcoin this morning at $38,820. Bloomberg Surveillance with Tom Keene, Jonathan Farrow, and Lisa Abramowitz. Straight ahead. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.